A65. Number 16B.
All right. So we would here find, so to say, we could call it the law of impulsion, the law of divine impulsion, which is a very important point because in absolute Christian Science we are constantly interested that the newness of life springs forth, that everything that happens happens as a newness and a harmonious newness. So in order that something is going to happen, we must have a right starting point somewhere. We must have the law of divine impulsion that is constantly at work, which would mean that that within our consciousness we would entertain a constant melody that constantly says, you know, God is the one being, it's the one reality, it's the only thing that exists, it's the only thing that is going on. And how does it go on? It lies in the inner nature of being itself, that it constantly has a divine urge, a divine impulsion, and that the divine impulsion is in itself true and factual and is in itself absolutely perfect and has within itself a divine plan and divine purpose and the divine aim. And so we drop our efforts of trying to play God and trying to do things ourselves. So we let it happen. That's why we could also express this law here or define life, truth, and love as let there be. That let there be is really pinpointing really life, truth, and love. We let it be, we don't try to do it ourselves. If I say we don't try to do it ourselves, perhaps this gives us another clue for the importance of this law, because we can ask ourselves, what is the counterfeit of this life, truth, and love? How does the counterfeit manifest itself usually in our consciousness, in our attitude towards life? What is the counterfeit of life, truth, and love?
We are the creator.
So at the point of life we say, we are the creator, huh? We can do things. And
I'm responsible,
yeah. Yeah, if I don't do it, it won't get done. Yes, quite right. Huh? Or you can even go further, to a further negative. Maybe the negative over what you said. The negative of what you just said before would be,
I can do it better than anybody else.
Yes, yes. And if you go to an even deeper negative, You will say, I can't make it, huh?
Yeah.
You see? God, I can't make it, huh? You give up, huh? So, or you question yourself, can I make it, huh? Isn't that a terrific argument that flows right through our whole life? Perhaps through every day, all through the year, which always is within ourselves a sense, well, I don't think I can make it. I wonder if I could make it, if I can make it. Can you see? It's questioning that there is a successful creative impulsion. So we doubt that, therefore we feel, oh, I can't make it, I'm not good enough, I don't know enough, and you wonder, may I make it? And even if you feel, all right, I try and I will make it, huh? I pull up my socks and I'm going jolly well to make it. then usually comes in the counterfeit of truth, which says what?
I'll do it wrong.
I may do it wrong, huh? I don't know quite if I will do it right. Huh? And you begin to doubt, will it be right what I am doing? Huh? Yes? And the counterfeit of love comes in. You'll never finish it. It'll never be. Huh? I will never get there. Huh?
Will I be successful?
Will I ever make it? Huh? Yes. So we doubt the fulfillment of it, and that is something that forms the human consciousness very much. If we look into the world and to the various people and to their attitude and how they go at it in life, if they have any life purpose at all, just don't live from day to day, one can always see that these three are constantly in the back of their mind, can I do it? And if I do it, will it be right? And will it ever come to a fulfillment? Will it ever come to a climax? Will it ever, can I ever fulfill my life purpose? How few people, I think we can say, have a sense that they really will feel that they can fulfill the purpose of life. Can you see? Life, truth, and love. To fulfill the purpose of life. Very few. They feel, I tried. They may feel, I tried to do my best, but I'm not quite sure. Huh? I'm not quite sure. So this is a terrific, important law for each one of us, which says, well, each one feels I would like to make a goal, a real goal of my life. I really would like to see a fulfillment of my being here, and one doesn't know quite why one is here and for what one is here and what is really our mission and our individuality and our purpose. One doesn't know. Nobody knows. But there is a law behind, a divine law, which would say to us, but there is a life force there who knows what is right for me, truth, and who will bring us to the point of love, to the point of a fulfilled life. A terrific law.
Either Cummings or Orton wrote an essay on writing a poem, and the question was that once you achieve something that's really considered a great status, great value, then there is this argument, will it ever happen again?
Yeah. Terrific, huh? Will it happen again, huh? That's, I think, the great problem as I see it with most genius, that they are producing very good works of art or science when they are young, or perhaps in the middle of their life, and then usually comes the end of their life where they just feel they can't do it anymore, they can't produce it anymore. I see that so often with people who write books, what you call them, writers, huh? That they get their fame when they are perhaps 30, 40, perhaps even 50, and then slowly they get into terrific fear. Huh? You call it another way, you can have another term for it, for fear,
anxiety,
yeah, etc., huh? That they can go on. And actually, another thing is that you will always surpass your previous success. Or else you don't feel it is progress if one does not surpass one's former success. So that can really be quite a burden on one's life and an anxiety and depression on one's life. I see it right back with our big writers we had in the German-speaking field, that they are now at an age where they just struggle within themselves because they feel they don't have any more the genius, the inspiration to do an even better job or a gooder job as they have done. Well, I think this is true of everyone. See? That we always pass through, perhaps through a period where we can bring forth something new and a new vista, and then suddenly comes the anxiety, will it go on in this way? Yes. See, I remember at the, well, it's a bit personal, but still, you can feel it with me, say, when Chandoli was pouring forth his vision, you know, at the end of his life, so between 1937-38 until 1950, it was a terrific thing. It just poured forth every year something new. We would come back to the association and we are quite sure something terrific new will be presented. And it was so. Year after year after year after year. Terrific. Until we got out of breath, really. Huh? And then, when it was no more here, that same thing came upon us. How does it go on? Will we now stall if the pioneer is no more here? See? What will happen to the idea? Is there a possibility that there is something more to be unfolded? Fundamentally, one knows that the idea will always unfold over thousands of year periods. It will always unfold. But the anxiety was here. Gosh, where are we now? Who is going to inspire us? Okay, at the beginning we said we have plenty to do to catch up with him, what he has presented over those 12 years. That will take us another half a lifetime to digest it and so on. And I remember when I got that letter from Peggy where she said that Chandoli is no more here, that whole burden wanted to come over me. I can still see myself sitting in the office when I opened that letter and read it. And then I thought, golly, no, this is not true. This is not Chandoli. It is was using Chandoli was the law of life, truth, and love. And actually we were witnessing not Chandoli, we were witnessing the law of life, truth, and love. And actually life, truth, and love didn't pass away. Life, truth, and love is here. And it is just a matter of being willing to listen to that law, to be open to that law and not restrict that law to a single person, to the channel of a single person, which is anyway spiritualism. To think that life, truth, and love only can act through a body, this is spiritualism. It's mixing the idea of life, truth, and love with a personality. And so I picked it up right away then, and I was so glad to free myself at once of that sense that the idea is dependent on any person. So this is a terrific law, and I entertain it as much as I can, day in and day out, wherever I am. I just try to listen to the music. It's like a background music. It's not the law that I sit down and say, now I want to go through the law of life, truth, and love. And what does it mean? What does life mean? What truth and what love? And so on. But you get into a habit so that the music stays with you. You know, it's just sometimes when you catch a new melody on the radio or on the television and you hear it a few times and over, and suddenly you notice that it stays with you, that wherever you go, somehow something hums that melody. And so it is with this law. Just should be a constant hum within ourselves that always says, I, God, I, the one being, the only being there is, that capital B being, is constantly at the point of life, truth, and love, constantly impelling itself as life to bring forth the true facts of being at the point of fulfillment and completion in the divine plane, and entertaining that in all the various hues of that law, you really feel that it's working within you. Yes. So that would kill off that false sense, do I know it, will I make it, will I be successful, all that will really go. That law of life, truth, and love is natural law that has always been felt throughout generations. It's a law that the Bible was aware of, and we know that right at the beginning of Genesis, the first chapter on Genesis, the first record of Genesis, is actually from a higher point of view, not just the order of the 7 days, from mind to spirit to soul, principle, life, truth, and love. But as we have seen, and as we'll see next week when we take Genesis, that in Genesis there is that higher plane of consciousness at work, where God constantly said, let there be life, and he made it factual truth, and it was fulfilled, and God saw that it was good, and it has a tone of love. So that within that let there be is already also the factuality of it and the fulfilled sense of it. And so that goes right from the beginning of the Bible through the whole Bible. There are in the Old and in the New Testament wonderful short descriptions of that law of life, truth, and love. For instance, I just take a few verses from the Bible, from Job. You know him, huh? Job. He says, for he, God, for he performeth the thing that is appointed for me. Can you hear in it, without using the term life, without using the term truth or love, you hear the melody of it. He performs. Well, in order to perform, you have to do something. That you get the sense God is going to impel something, to perform something, life. The thing, something factual, is going to perform factualities, truth, that is appointed for me, love, that is in the plan for me, that is planned out for me, that has a purpose, isn't it? Can you hear the tonality? See, that's what should happen, that we are so tenderly and yet definitely aware of the tones, that it doesn't matter what kind of words we read. We hear the melody. So, or in Psalms, we have that it says, the Lord will perfect that which concerneth me. Do you say perfect or perfect? Yeah. I thought so. That's why that something was wrong about it. The Lord will perfect that which concerneth me. Can you see the will of God, the urge of God? The Lord will do it. You have the impact, impulsion. And he will do all that truth, all that, all the things that are necessary to be done, which concerns me, which is outlined again for my plan, for my life purpose, so that it will be fulfilled. You see. Or you take some from the New Testament, like Paul. Paul anyway gives an example of life, truth, and love. He himself, his whole life, is actually an example of that. You see, Paul, as practically no other of the disciples, he's constantly impelled to do something. He's constantly on the go. Therefore, he always expresses that life, the impulsion of life, makes him do something. And he does all sorts of things, and he goes through all sorts of experience, but he always comes out at the other end as the victor, in a fulfilled sense. No matter if he is put in a prison, he makes the best of it and makes a wonderful demonstration of it. No matter if he goes shipwreck, he makes the best of it, and he will get there where the plan of love wanted him to go. His whole life was a wonderful expression of the power of life, truth, and love. So one isn't surprised that in his writings he brings that out often and often, especially with his beloved church in Philippia, that was really a church that was near to his heart. It was a church where he felt that they began to see the idea and not so much the personality of the situation. And to the Philippians he wrote, "He which has begun a good work in you." Can you hear the tone of life? He that has begun a good work in you. It's the impulsion of life. He will perform it. He will make it factual. Until the day of Jesus Christ. Can you hear in this rendering, until the day of Jesus Christ? That's the tone of love, until it is fulfilled, because the day of Jesus Christ was the day of fulfillment of salvation. So without using the term life, truth, and love, you just hear that Paul could see that the terrific law of life, truth, and work was at work in the Philippians. Or he says to the Philippians, "For it is God, life, which works in you, both to will," again life, "to will, and to do," truth is factual, does it, "of his good pleasure," love. A good pleasure is another term for saying to fulfill everything to the point of perfection for your good pleasure. Can you hear the terrific impact? "For it is God that worketh in you both to will and to do for his good pleasure." Think if we had that background music within ourselves, that divine hum within ourselves, which always says at every point of experience, always says, there is the law of life, truth, and love at work, there is the will of God at work that will do what God wants to do and does it to our satisfaction, to our complete satisfaction. Love. Do we have that constant consciousness? Or is the very opposite law at work that says, I wonder if I can do it? Will it come out all right? I'm not quite sure. Will it be a flop? Counterfeit of love? That mentality is ingrained in our mortal consciousness. And it needs real, conscious culture to counteract it and show the real law until finally it stays with us as a constant, conscious capacity and stays with us as a melody that is constantly talking to us and playing that melody to us. Yes. So, actually, you see, we could say that really that law shows us that we are, so to say, programmed for success. That man is programmed for success because of the law of life, truth, and love. He is not programmed for a downfall. He is programmed for success. That's Life, Truth, and Love, to me, we could also call it, in the modern terminology, our other science talk, it is, so to say, the success mechanism. It's the mechanism that shows how everything works towards success. And in Collectania, I have picked up something from the Watchers, of Mrs. Eddy's Watchers, where she said, all that is within me is the spirit of victory. Yeah, that's the success mechanism. All that is within me is the spirit of victory. And we have that if we entertain this law. Yes. That, I think, even Taya de Chardin points out, I mean, I'm not a follower of Taya de Chardin, but still he's quite a guy, and he has broken out from the limits of, say, the ordinary science of evolution. He calls men not so much as what has been called the Homo sapiens, but he calls it the Homo progressivus. See, the Homo progressivus means the man that is really programmed for progression, for success, for infinite progression, is concrete being. So we should see that really we are programmed for success. That's our true being. Yes, we make a break here.